Hi, Vanessa.
Hi, Ariana.
Thank you so much for meeting me in the Library of Alexandria.
Oh my God, thank you for inviting me here.
I know, we thought it was lost, but here it is.
Yeah, I never would have guessed it was in a suburb of Detroit.
Yeah, you just have to have the fantasy magic of Women of Harry Potter land take you wherever you want to go.
So you say Women of Harry Potter, and yet today we are doing something very special because it is your birthday. First of all, happy birthday.
Thank you.
So I didn't want to spend time getting you a present. So my gift to you is that you get to complain about Ron Weasley.
My gift is that I'm about to get a lot of emails that are very unhappy.
Well, and then your challenge, you are somebody who likes a challenge. And
yes.
So your gift is that you get to complain about Ron Weasley. And then the challenge, which is part of your gift, is that you have to find a reason to bless Ron Weasley.
Yes, this is a differently structured episode than we usually do. We're going to do part one, me laying out my case for why I think Ron is horrible, and then part two, us together finding a reason to bless him.
So can you explain to people why we're doing this besides your birthday?
Yeah, we're doing this because we've made some comments, me at live shows, and then I think inspired by me, you've made some comments on the podcast where we make fun of Ron and are a little bit harsh with him and say things like, he doesn't deserve Hermione Granger.
Yeah.
And we've gotten some pushback on that.
From the people.
From the people who have fairly pointed out that we never have actually explicitly said what our problem with Ron is. So I thought I just wanted to have a conversation with you about it and explain what bothers me. And I really think this is a thing that is in me, that like I have particular tendencies that Ron rubs the wrong way in me. Like, I don't think he is a universally bad character in the way that I think that Umbridge is a universally bad character. I think sometimes in the way that we don't examine the humanity of the characters who are cast in a more negative light in this book, I get a little bothered when we don't point out the failings of the characters who are our heroes in these books.
Fair enough. Yeah. I think that that's a really interesting challenge because so much of these podcasts are about trying to lift up the humanity in one another. And I think it's really interesting that part of lifting up the humanity in someone is having enough respect for them to hold them accountable, right? And like, love and forgiveness does not mean excusing everything within a person.
Exactly. And I think we've been pretty critical of Harry during our series on Harry Potter and the Sacred Text and some of the choices that he's made. And the whole point of this series is for us to think about what the books inspire in us and how they reflect on how we want to be in the world. And part of thinking about how you want to be in the world is seeing ways that you don't want to be in the world. And I think the fact of the matter is I don't want to be like Ron Weasley because I think that Ron... though he is dopey and charming and very loyal to his friends, is someone who I've noticed in the last few books really lacks a lot of empathy. He's someone who would rather make a mean comment than a kind comment and who doesn't take back the hurtful things that he says or apologize for them in a lot of instances. Recently, as I've been thinking about this and particularly about like, When I say this to people, they say, oh, he's just a teenage boy. And I think we excuse teenage boys a lot of the time for what we call obliviousness or like their lack of emotional intelligence, that like they just aren't as thoughtful as women. And I think it's really important to hold young men to those standards in the way that women are already doing. Women are thoughtful about the interiority of the people around them in a way that many young men are not expected to do.
Yeah. Can you give me a couple of examples of where you see this tendency in Ron?
Yeah. I mean, I think the very first time we see it is when he insults Hermione Granger and he says, it's no wonder no one can stand her. And she runs by crying. And then he says, so she must have noticed that she's got no friends. This is what I'm struggling with in Ron. Like, I don't think it's bad to complain about people or sometimes I see him in these books saying negative things about characters that I also feel negatively about. Like in the early books, the negative things he says are about Snape, are about Filch. He's like, oh, I hope he dies and doesn't come back to school. You know, like those things I want to be critical of, be like, well, don't say that you hope that he dies, like say something else. But I like understand when you're complaining with your friend, you let off steam in that way, why you make dark jokes like that. In Ron, I see it. I see it bridge over into not just how he relates to the negative characters in his life, but like as a mode of seeing everybody in his life where he is like kind of constantly critical and making fun of people. And like that is what he thinks that humor is tearing them down.
I'm going to offer possible alternative ways to read these things.
Absolutely.
So he's doing some truth telling. I would say that the virtue of him doing this is maybe pointing out to Hermione that she has no friends. And then they do become friends. And so it might inspire her to want to buddy up. And I will say that he says it, and I know that he doesn't apologize, but he does an action in that he then becomes best friends with her. So he is willing to change his position.
Yeah, I think he is often willing to change his position slowly. Like, I think he is someone who comes into the book with a lot of prejudices. He comes with prejudice against giants, against goblins. And then, like, through learning through his friends, he, like, comes away more understanding and less prejudiced. And he is a person who calls Luna Lovegood Loony Lovegood, like, way later in the books than Harry and Hermione. But, like, I really believe by the end of the books, he, like, no longer thinks of her that way. I do think he has the capacity to learn emotionally how to treat people. I just think his instincts are to be kind of glib and unapologetic about that glibness.
Do you think that this is because he's a victim of bullying by his older brothers, specifically Fred and George?
No, I think he's learned it from Fred and George. I think everybody in the Weasley family makes fun of people for jokes. Like, we see Ginny make fun of people for jokes. I do think that he's learned this. I don't think it's like our identities are so deeply interior that we don't get them from anywhere. But yeah. And I guess we just spend more time with Ron than we do with Fred and George. But it's definitely something that bothers me across the Weasley family.
But we tease each other a lot.
Yeah. And I don't mind the moments as much when Ron is calling Hermione like a know-it-all to her face. I mind the moments when he's doing it behind people's backs, because he has so many instances in this book where he's like whispering negative things to Harry. And I worry, as Harry is our main character, like how that's affecting him and how he thinks about the people around him. Like, I think, like, Harry really trusts Ron and relies on Ron. And there's this moment in book 7 where Griphook says, basically, like, I will do this for you if you give me the Sword of Gryffindor. And Harry consults Ron. And Ron says, that's just a story the goblins like to make up. And what you should do is double cross him. What you should do is promise him the sword and then give him a fake and run away. I think that that kind of thinking in Ron is rooted in the same thing that his nasty comments are rooted in, which is like an inability to imagine outside of himself. And I think that could lead to some really terrible things. And it's lucky that Hermione is there to say, like, I can't believe you suggested that. Like, how dare you? That's a horrible thing to say, Ron.
So first of all, I think that if I were to distill what you were saying, it's that, like, Ron is sort of the epitome of white male privilege.
Yeah. And I think that's why I'm reacting so emotionally to it. I think it's because, not because I actually dislike Ron, but because the things that I see in Ron are like so much of what I see in the world and things that I think are hurtful in the world.
Yeah. You know, they are a poor family, but they are a family with a lot of structural privilege, right? They are purebloods, and so they are not being targeted by Voldemort, the Weasleys, you know, and Ron's dad has a pretty high up job at the ministry, or at least a mid-level job at the ministry, and all of their children are, like, pretty successful, right? Like, one works in banking, the other works with dragons. Like, they all seem to be doing well. It's not a lack of access that keeps the Weasleys, like, sort of lower middle class, and they're always able to feed, you know, to eat. Like, we don't see them suffering on the margins. And I really do like, I always think that wanting to hold somebody accountable is actually a sign of hoping for them and seeing potential in them, and that it's not about judging them. So I appreciate what you're doing with Ron. I guess I want to give him credit for always being willing to change his mind, and for, like, he thinks Hagrid should be ashamed of being half giant, but he still loves Hagrid. And he's, like, able to occupy these really complex places. And I guess I just want to forgive him for a lot of his idiocy.
Yeah. I mean, I think we talk about Ron being resilient in a way where he, I say that he doesn't, like, outright apologize. But what he does do is, like, bring himself back to the table. Like when he and Harry have fights, you know, he does come back. When he and Hermione have fights, they reach resolution. And I think a lot of that is swallowing his own ego and being willing to occupy this, you know, space of being wrong or just like not needing to be so right that he can't continue the friendship.
He's willing to sacrifice a little bit of pride in order to be connected again.
Yeah, he's not the brightest of the bunch. So, like, there are lots of moments where, like, he has an idea and Hermione has an idea and Hermione is right. And he is never mad about that. He only ever celebrates Harry and Hermione's successes. And I think that that is so lovely in Ron.
Even in book 7, which I think everybody thinks of, like, the big Ron betrayal. And this, I think, might be an interesting way to talk about white privilege because, like, Ron leaves and a lot of people talk about how he was hungry. And Hermione, I think, is, like, more willing to make sacrifices. And I also think that Harry grew up hungry. And so Harry knows what it's like to suffer from hunger. And so he and Hermione both, like, grit their way through it more. And this is a young man who, through his privilege, has just, like, never had to suffer. Right. Mm-hmm. And so this is the first time he's suffering in his life. And he's like, I can't do it. And he doesn't just come back. He has to work really hard to find them. So it's a committed coming back. And the other thing that I think is impressive about his coming backness is that he knows how bad it is. And he's coming back.
Yeah.
When they sign up for the adventure, they don't know how bleak and awful it's going to be. And Ron knows exactly what he's coming back to. And I just think that there's something really beautiful about returning.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that is like the ultimate bravery, right? Like is to walking into something knowing exactly how bad it's going to be. And there's so many instances where Ron does that. I mean, he doesn't know that Aragog is going to be in the forest, but he knows that he's following spiders into a forest. And there's this lovely moment where like you see him like close his eyes and think about the fact that Hermione is in the hospital wing petrified and like reckon with his own deep fear of spiders and go into the forest anyway.
Yeah. And so I love that you're living in this in-between place on Ron of honoring really a lot of like white male privilege slash like bullying.
Yeah. I'm so scared that if Ron hadn't met Harry and Hermione, that he could end up more like Draco or like be born to a different. I know that so much of what Ron is comes from his family, but I do think a lot of his deep values around justice come from his family too. Like he's willing to step into this fight because his whole family is already in the fight. But I think his mentality about the world of liking to make snide jokes of bullying fits more in line with some of the kind of villainous characters that we see in the book. And I think if he had been sorted into Slytherin, he could be in Draco's gang and like kind of indulge those things. And he's very lucky that he isn't and that he's with Harry and Hermione, who put him in his place. Well, Hermione does. And that he has parents who also have good hearts.
Yeah, I absolutely see that within Ron. The other sort of question I have for you, because I think that something that we think about a lot with Ron is the fact that he's best friends with like sort of the most famous child in the wizarding world. And so I'm wondering if you overall think he handles that gracefully. I mean, I think he's sort of like a dodo about it sometimes, but I think overall that's got to be a tough position to be in.
Oh, I would hate to be in that position.
Yeah. And I think he overall handles it really well. And so I'm just wondering what you think about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think we see it give him a complex, which it would to anybody, especially as a person who's in a huge family and so often feels like he's invisible. Like before he even meets Harry, he's reckoning with his own sense of specialness.
Right. He's like, oh, my mom made a sandwich that I hate.
Exactly. And so then to be placed next to Harry, where Harry is given every privilege time and time again, we know weighs on him. And I do think he deals with really gracefully. He has some moments where he has outbursts about it, as anyone would. And I think, you know, Harry only has two friends. So in many ways, like early on, he finds his specialness through being Harry's friend.
Yeah.
And that's hard and complicated when when you think you're good because you are in proximity to someone who's good. But I never really see Ron have a deep self-esteem issue. I see him wish that he had better luck or that he had more resources or that people paid more attention to him. And I see him be anxious about the way his family will judge him for certain things. I don't ever see him thinking like, well, am I worth hanging out with the brightest witch of our age and the chosen one? And I admire him. And I also think that that comes out of his white male privilege.
Yeah, I became very good friends with like this sort of like prominent second wave feminist who was in her 50s at the time when I was in my 20s living in New York. And she told me a story. We were talking about sort of like the feeling of like the mediocrity of certain white men, right? Like, I mean, it was just like all the things that we all experience of like watching one man in particular really succeed in my workplace when he was a bully and a jerk and did the same work, if not slightly worse than all the women and whatever. We were talking about it and she said, you know, I've spent my whole life thinking about these issues. And just recently she had 3 children, 1 daughter and 2 sons. And her daughter is a surgeon and her sons like were also very successful. Like, I don't remember what they did. Lawyers, worked in finance, like very white collar, you know, Ivy League type people. And they were home for a holiday or whatever. And her daughter came in and said, Mom, what food is there? And her mom said, I don't know, check the fridge. And then her son came in and said, Mom, what food is there? And she went, oh, sweetie, let me look. And her daughter looked at her and said, you didn't raise a good man for me.
Hmm.
And that in that moment, she was just like, oh, my God, I didn't. Right. And I think that we've just gotten into this cycle of not holding men to high enough standards. I think Hermione holds Ron to a pretty high standard.
Yeah.
And he thrives under that standard.
There's one more place where I think Ron is the epitome of everything that I hate in men that I'm going to read to you. And then I would love to move on to blessing Ron.
Great.
Ron and Harry are talking about bringing girls to the Yule Ball. And Ron says, we should get a move on, you know, ask someone. He's right. We don't want to end up with a pair of trolls. Hermione let out a sputter of indignation. A pair of what? Excuse me? Well, you know, said Ron, shrugging. I'd rather go alone than with Eloise Midgen, say. Her acne looks loads better lately, and she's really nice. Her nose is off center, said Ron. Oh, I see, Hermione said, bristling. So basically, you're going to take the best-looking girl who'll have you, even if she's completely horrible. Yeah, that sounds about right, said Ron. And, like, obviously, he loves Hermione, so, like, for him, it isn't about looks. Like, he has a capacity to judge women outside of their looks. But even when he's talking about Cho Chang with Harry, he says, yeah, she was good to look at, but you don't want a girl who cries all the time. You know, like, he is mentioning the good to look at as the ultimate quality in a woman. And I just, like, he gets handed down these things. All men get handed down these things. But it just rubs me so wrong when I'm reading the books and like trying to treat him as like a hero and a part of this beautiful golden trio. And he says things like that.
So I just think that he is absolutely the embodiment of privilege and of the patriarchy. Right. Like he's a bro. Right.
Yeah.
He is a complete like jockey bro. And he is the kind of teenager that when I see like walking on a Friday night, I cross the street because I'm like, you feel entitled and feel like the world owes you things. And that is the scariest kind of person to me.
Yeah.
And I think given all of that, he turns out pretty great and makes some good choices. So which
it leads us to our blessings.
Yes.
So to start our blessings portion, we're going to play a voicemail that was actually submitted to our other podcast, Harry Potter and the Sacred Text, that we've stolen for Women of Harry Potter. And it is by Malika, whose favorite character in the Harry Potter series is Ron Weasley.
I wanted to share some thoughts about Ron. I love Ron. He's my favorite character in the series. And I've often had a hard time articulating to other people, as well as to myself, why that is the case. And lately I've come to realize that it is a little bit because I see Ron through the perspective of Hermione. And at first glance, as a reader, it's difficult to sense why Hermione and Ron end up being in a romantic relationship. They seem so fundamentally incompatible and so different in their identities that it's hard to parse exactly where their relationship works. But looking at Ron as Hermione would, you start to see that what she gives him, which is, you know, the ability to be empathetic and the ability to take on responsibility and to relate better to the world around him, is as valuable as what he gives to her. Because by being willing to be molded and by being willing to be shaped into someone whose worldviews change so drastically, he gives her a certain kind of validation that for someone who is so sure of their intellectual capabilities, but not necessarily of their skills in the realm of friendship and social skills, is very validating. So I do think that Ron has a certain openness to being critiqued that we in real life often find is not the case with people that we disagree with. And sometimes the friendships that you have with people who are problematic and people who've grown up in a certain environment that makes them blissfully unaware of, you know, the problems of people around them, they can still be very valuable, because if they're willing to listen to you and if they're willing to value what you say, especially to the point where they imbibe the qualities that you hold so important and as so strong, it can be a really satisfying friendship. And it can mean sometimes even more than the friendships where you already agree with the other person, because you're able to shape someone and you're able to look at the world through a different perspective while also knowing that that other person is doing the same for you. And I think that is the real value of what Ron brings to the series as somebody who is, you know, fairly problematic, fairly silly and irresponsible at the beginning. And by the end, by being open to the ways that other people critique what he does, becomes someone who is really worthy of being loved by somebody like Hermione. Thanks so much. Really looking forward to hearing what you have to say about this.
I think what Mullica is pointing to is something that we started to talk about earlier, which is that Ron is a character who changes a lot across the books and is someone who is very convinced by things that Hermione teaches him and is really open to ideas other than his own. And I think what that points to in Ron is a kind of humility. And if blessings are about like looking at characters in this book and thinking like, oh, what do I want in my life that this character has? I think I would love to have Ron's humility and his approach to his relationships.
Yeah. And I think also, so he could become friends with Seamus and Dean.
Mm.
And he could very easily sort of ditch Harry for Seamus and Dean once it becomes clear that being friends with the most famous guy doesn't actually mean you're popular or well-liked, right? So I know that people talk about Ron's loyalty a lot, but I want to think of it not as loyalty, but as commitment and as constantly choosing. I think that he could sort of talk Harry out of being friends with Hermione, right? Like the only line that we get as to why the three of them really become friends is like there are certain things that you can't go through without becoming friends with someone, and fighting a 12-foot troll is one of them. And it's just this like shared trauma that makes them friends, but he stays committed to her. And I do see him as having other opportunities. Maybe it is the sorting hat's luck and the fact that he's a Weasley that keeps him from being a Crab or a Goyle, but he sticks it out in like a really difficult triad.
Yeah, I think he might be happier elsewhere.
Yeah. And I think we have to celebrate people who are willing to do the hard thing. I also think we've already talked about this, but I also think like coming back and having to deal with the wrath of Hermione and right, like I think all of those are the hard thing. He is somebody who is really willing to do the hard thing.
Except for his homework.
Yeah, that really doesn't bother me because I also hated homework. Like, just because you're not academically inclined in your high school years doesn't mean that you're, like, dumb or lazy. Like, academics is a very narrow needle to thread that, like, not everybody likes school.
Yeah, I'm wondering if maybe he's willing to make the hard choice but not willing to do the hard work.
Yeah, I don't know. I again, think that a lot of that is about like a white privilege leading to a laziness.
Right. Like, I think he gets taught that he isn't going to be held responsible for some of his bad decisions, right? Like, even with the Ford Anglia, they steal a car, they fly through the air. It's his suggestion that they do it. He flies the car, which I think shows great initiative. Like, I think I was very surprised that Ron had taken the front seat in that decision-making process. He's usually in the back seat on their strategies.
Fun metaphor.
Thanks. And then Dumbledore and McGonagall decide that he and Harry aren't really held responsible for their actions. And he goes upstairs to the Gryffindor Tower and like grins about it. He like, and then people come up to him and they're like, "You're the one with the car," and he's like, "Yeah, I am." I think he like learns that like sometimes making bad decisions is like fun, and you don't get consequences for it.
Does get consequences though. His wand breaks, and he like right. makes himself throw up slugs.
Right.
Like, I guess what I want to bless him for, like, if you're going to bless him for his humility, is for surviving the patriarchy.
Mm.
I think men are also victims of the patriarchy, right?
I do too,
I know you do. And I think that women tend to be bigger victims of the patriarchy, but I absolutely think men are victims of it. I think that men have the power to make themselves not victims of the patriarchy, whereas women don't have that power. And that is a huge difference between men and women. And I think Ron takes all of that power and makes himself into something better than what the patriarchy wanted him to be.
Yeah. I wish he did it for Hermione and not for Harry. There's so many moments where he's just making fun of Hermione and taking Hermione for granted. I think he's learning from her and he's choosing to stay there, but I don't think he does it gracefully. And I don't see him like in earnest, like reconciling with himself.
So it's so interesting. I think he does by the end. And I think that the moment he does is when he comes back from what we absolutely see as his biggest failure.
Right.
And is his biggest failure, right? He is on the front lines of a war against hate. And he has the opportunity to really be on the front lines and risk himself. And he leaves. And it is a terrible betrayal. But the fact that he comes back and he, once he comes back, chooses Hermione.
Yeah.
Like Hermione and Harry are both like offering potential strategies, and he is kissing Hermione's butt so hard that no matter what she says, he's like, yes, what she says, right? And he is, I think that he chooses the person with less power, but who he loves and respects.
Yeah, and I think he knows that Hermione is smarter than he is, like, throughout the books. He, like, sees him and Harry as, like, the two bro-y buddies, and then Hermione as, like, as this uptight but lovable goddess, you know?
Yeah. I guess I also want to bless him for not being Ernie McMillan.
Right.
I just prefer a man who is like, she is so smart. Look at her go. I'll ride her coattails a little bit. Then, oh my God, she's so smart and that threatens me. And he is never threatened by Hermione's intelligence. The only time that he really gets threatened by Hermione is her relationship with Victor Crumb.
Right.
Which is fair. He's already competing against Harry, the most famous wizard in Britain. And now Victor Crumb? It is an unfair burden.
Oh, I don't.
A mediocre white man to have to go up against.
I don't begrudge him feeling terrible about it. I begrudge him then saying to Hermione, the only reason Crumb would want to date you is so that he could get closer to Harry, or maybe because then you would help him with his tasks. He just doesn't have a lot of elegance. I guess I agree with you that he has the right instincts and he follows those instincts to success. And I guess also it doesn't matter how you get there, except like.
It does because he hurts Luna's feelings on the way.
Yeah. Yeah. And he hurts Hermione on the way.
He hurts a lot of people on the way. And so it does matter how you get there. I think it does matter how you get somewhere. And yeah, it is an inelegant journey for Ron Weasley. So you have done an admirable job. I feel like you have bent over backwards to try to see the good in Ron Weasley.
I don't think I like completely succeeded, but I'm going to keep trying. Like, I feel like the act is just to be generous in the ways that he is not.
In that last comment, you failed.
Yep.
So great. So I have a quiz for you.
I'm so excited. Is it about goddess women who settle for mediocre men?
No, because I don't think I get to make those distinctions.
I guess I don't either.
So in trying to figure out what this quiz should be about, I had a brainwave, which is that the Weasleys are the Kennedys of the wizarding world.
Except less rich.
Well, they are a powerful family of a certain, like, pedigree that are involved in politics and are beset by tragedy.
You're right.
Yes, I know. I'm a very wise person. So my quiz for you is about the women of the Kennedy family.
Ooh.
So there were 9 Kennedy children. There were 4 sons and 5 daughters. the four sons we all sort of like know about, right? It's like JFK, Bobby, and Teddy, and then one of them died in war. I feel like most of us can name like three out of the four brothers, but we cannot as easily name the sisters. My questions for you are going to be about the sisters of the Kennedy family.
Great.
Yes. Okay. The first one is about Rosemary Kennedy. Rosemary Kennedy was the oldest girl out of the nine Kennedy siblings. She had seizures and was reported to have, quote unquote, terrible mood swings. How did her father, Joseph, deal with these symptoms? A, institutionalize her. B, order a frontal lobotomy. C, get her a lithium prescription. Or D, use horse therapy.
I actually know this one. They gave her a lobotomy.
They did. They gave her a lobotomy that failed?
Yeah.
But what lobotomies succeeded?
None of them. They all just rendered people
unable to take care of themselves in any way.
Yeah. I mean, the history of lobotomies in our country is dark and scary.
Terrifying. And very rarely happened to wealthy white men.
Oh, no. It was for women to control their hysteria.
Yeah. So lobotomies at the time were considered like a real way to deal with mental health and other disorders. And it's just she had to be taken care of for the rest of her life. And so the rest of the family was incredibly impacted by this and really resented their father for doing this to their sister, who they all adored. And so my next two questions are about sisters who were very much inspired by Rosemary.
Hmm.
In large part due to her sister's treatment, Eunice Kennedy Shriver dedicated her life to mental health research and support. Which of these did she not do? A, start the Special Olympics. B, found the National Institute of Child Health and Human Development. C, develop a curriculum for comprehensive character education programs focusing on students with disabilities that eventually got adopted by over 1,200 schools in North America. Or D, trick question. This woman was that awesome. She did all three.
Yeah, she definitely did all three.
She did all three of those things.
That's amazing.
What the what?
What are we doing with our lives?
I know. And then her daughter married Arnold Schwarzenegger. What? Okay. My last question for you. So equally awesome, Jean Kennedy Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Which of these fabulous things did she not do? A, perform as the Irish ambassador during the Irish peace process after the Troubles. B, lobby for women's right to choose directly against her Catholic roots. C, work on all of the campaigns for her brother John F. Kennedy, including when she was a child. Or D, was the founder of the VSA, the Very Special Arts Department of VSA and Accessibility, which is still a department in our government.
I'm going to say A.
No, she was the Irish ambassador that helped negotiate peace during the Troubles.
Whoa.
And there are obviously some people who are upset about the way that that went, but it is still an incredible thing for a woman born in the 1950s to have accomplished. And anyway, she did not go against her Catholic roots and lobby for choice. This is a very Catholic family. Her mother was like up for sainthood. So they, you know, they have close ties to the Catholic Church.
Yes. Regardless, sounds like she was an incredible woman.
Yes.
Sounds like all of them were incredible. And I wish that I had known these things. And thank you so much for telling me.
You are welcome. Thank you for torturing yourself for your birthday. I think it is very brave of you to take on a controversial topic like Ron Weasley. And I think it is really commendable of you. I think we all should be taking hard looks at why we love the things we love and what it is that we overlook in one another, and be thinking critically about these things. And the reason we do it with these books is because very few people get hurt in the process of us analyzing fictional characters.
Yeah, and I think as we move into book seven, I'm like not as familiar with Ron in book seven. I'm like really excited to see him grow and to love the parts of him that grow and change and to hope for that growth and change in myself as well.
Well, thank you so much for taking me to this gorgeous library, which I had no idea was outside of Detroit. You're incredible.
Yeah, well, don't tell too many people because right now it's just you and me in this big library.
Yeah. Okay. We don't want it to be overrun.
Exactly.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Women of Harry Potter. We are a Not Sorry production, executive produced by me, Vanessa Zoltan, and Ariana Nettleman, produced and edited by Chelsea Erson. Special thanks this week to Megan Kelly for helping with my quiz. We will talk to you in 2 weeks.